What was the pivotal moment, the watershed moment that made history as we know it in the world today, in the Western world today, even possible? I'm talking about the history that has led to the foundation of all of the Western world's laws and codes of ethics. The history that forms a major part of the two major parts of the Old Testament. How many remember the two major themes of the Old Testament? Anybody want to take a guess? Creation's the beginning, but that leads to, because that's only two, three chapters. That, what was it? Exile is one of them, yep, and one other. The Exodus. Exodus and exile are the two largest themes of the Old Testament. This pivotal moment that we're going to consider today has a lot to do with the Exodus ever being a possibility. The pivotal moment that history not only recorded the deliverance of the Jews from the Egyptians, but also became the story that inspired other people and other people groups to get out from under oppression, to believe that their day of deliverance would also be coming. For example, in the American Revolution, writers and musicians would write stories and sing songs about the deliverance from Egypt because it reminded them of their situation. Israel was oppressed by the Pharaoh. The Puritans were oppressed by a king. And the Israelites had a sea in front of them. And the Puritans had an ocean in front of them. And they just took inspiration from the Exodus story that God heard their cry. He can hear our cry. He can bring us across that ocean, and we can find a place to worship just like the Israelites did. It inspired the Civil War music and themes of emancipation from slavery. Maybe some of you may have heard the song, Go Down Moses. Let me just mention some of the lyrics. But it's written in 1862. Again, they're using the story of Moses for inspiration in our Civil War. When Israel was in Egypt's land, let my people go. Oppressed so hard they could not stand, let my people go. Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt's land, tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. The Lord told Moses what to do, let my people go. To lead the Hebrew children through, let my people go. Missing a page, here we go. Israel stood by the water side, let my people go. At God's command, it did divide. Let my people go. And when they had reached the other shore, let my people go, they let the song of triumph roar. Let my people go. Lord, help us all from bondage flee. Let my people go. And let us all in Christ be free. Let my people go. This pivotal moment that I'm going to talk about today inspired that song and that spirit of the Civil War and getting rid of slavery. It's a story that reminds all those who are oppressed that God sees your misery and hears your cry, and God has a way out. Somewhere in the world right now is preparing a deliverer, somebody who he's going to use to lead us forward. And even if there were an ocean in front of us, he can part that ocean, and it's going to be okay. What was that watershed moment? What was that pivotal moment in the Exodus story that made the rest of the story and everything else I just mentioned even possible? Back to what Liz read, Exodus chapter 2, verse 1. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child. The history that I've been referring to was made possible because one mother among many mothers looked at her Hebrew boy among many other Hebrew baby boys and saw something that nobody else could see. This child of mine is a fine child, no ordinary child, no ordinary slave child. Now, she didn't see it because of something like him being born with a halo around his head, nothing like that. It's just the mother's eyes and loving gaze saw or was unwilling to see anything other but a future for her son and a godly destiny for her son. And her gaze on Moses changed our world forever. Even last Sunday when we had communion together, we were reenacting not only the Last Supper, But the meal that the Israelites enjoyed before they left Egypt for the last time. Even last week, we were commemorating what happened because of this moment. Now, I want to give you a little background to this pivotal moment, which we will return to. A few weeks ago, we took a series on the story of Joseph. Joseph eventually died. They took his bones with him when they traveled. But Joseph's family had gotten large in Egypt. They had kind of their suburb where they were living, and they were multiplying. And several generations of pharaohs came and went. And Israel got pretty big. Big enough that one of the pharaohs said, you know what? If they might make a league with one of our enemies, and they could take over us. They're getting so big. And so this pharaoh took matters into his own hands. He said to all of the women who were helping the Hebrew women have babies, when they have a male child, kill the male children. Let's do population control. Well, the midwives had trouble doing that, and so they didn't. And they just said that those Hebrew babies, they're strong enough that they just tend to survive before we get to them. And there's nothing we can do then. And the pharaoh was evil enough and scared enough. And no, let's do this. I insist that whenever a male Hebrew baby is born, throw them into the Nile River. He was going to exercise population control, and many Hebrew women had to do that. But Moses' mother saw a fine child, saw something that she believed was different about her child. And again, I don't think anything visibly was different. It's just what a mother can see. And she decided that wasn't going to happen to her son. She saw more than just another hopeless slave baby. You know, if you live in oppression, you kind of have to detach. It interferes with your attachments with each other, because tomorrow you could wake up and they're gone. They're sold or they're killed. They've disappeared. But she saw more than just one more helpless slave baby. She saw more than one more occasion for hopelessness and grief and despair. She, with her gaze, upset the status quo of the world and set new events into motion. Verse 3, when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. She wasn't going to be passive about this. She wasn't just going to hope for the best. She was going to take matters into her own hands. I'm going to do what I can. It may not work, but I can't rest if I haven't done everything I possibly could. And she made the potential for an escape for her baby. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the banks of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. What else happened that day was Pharaoh had a daughter. She was wanting to bathe on that particular day, and she also made a trip to the Nile River, and she had her attendants with her. While she was bathing, somebody heard in the distance the cry of a baby. Pharaoh's daughter looked that way and noticed, I think that's a basket over there. It sent one of her servants to go retrieve that basket and bring it back to her, and opened the basket, and wouldn't you know it, there inside the basket was a little baby. Let me read verse 5. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe. Her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. I want to pause just for a moment, because when I was doing last-minute touch-ups here, I saw something here that I'd never seen before, and I'm just going to mention it, so I'll remember it, and maybe you'll think it's interesting too. When Moses was eventually called to lead God's people out of Egypt, the voice of God that came to him said, I have seen their misery, and I have heard their cry. I'm noticing that Moses was saved because somebody saw his misery and heard him cry. Oh, the role of compassion in our life. That's just a side note. We'll come back to that some other day. The events of that day continued to unfold more deeply and came to include his sister. His sister, who had kind of a watchful eye over the baby when Pharaoh's daughter showed up. Verse 7, then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Basically, she's saying, I know a young mother who still has milk, and if you'll give her to me, I'll give the boy to me, I'll get him back to somebody. She's not telling the whole story, of course. Yes, go, she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother, got Moses' mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. She's not only mother, she's not only gets to be with her son, she can get paid for this. It's starting to sound like Germany to me. Now, for those of you who know, my daughter lives in Germany, and she just had a baby a year ago, and Germany's paying her to stay home. Maybe this is where it all started. Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. All of these events of this particular day and the couple of years until Moses is being weaned lead us all a setup for an identity crisis for Moses. Who am I? Am I a Hebrew? That's what the woman told me that nursed me, that raised me for the first couple of years of my life. Or am I an Egyptian? I've been living here these other years now. I've been educated like an Egyptian. I've been treated like a royal Egyptian. Who am I? And he would look out and see how the slaves, the Hebrew slaves, and how they were being treated oppressively. And part of him would know I'm supposed to be like them. I am part of them. And guilt might come in and a conflicted heart and mind. And then he would enjoy the benefits of being an Egyptian and back and forth an identity crisis. One day while he was in this crisis, he noticed an Egyptian beating up a Hebrew. And he looked around and nobody seemed to be looking, so he intervened and he killed the Egyptian, buried the Egyptian. But the next day somebody pointed out, hey, I saw that. And he knew he had to run. He had to run and spend 40 years in a wilderness tending sheep. All because of those events. Mother saw. Mother couldn't let him go to the fate that other Hebrew babies were going through. 40 years in a wilderness and tending sheep for his father-in-law. And then on a particular day, a bush that's on fire that seems not to be getting smaller and not burning up. So he goes out of curiosity, and wouldn't you know it, the bush talks to him. And that's where those words, go get my people, bring them out. Tell them I've heard their cries and I've seen their misery. Moses, after a long argument, obeys, goes to Egypt. He's empowered with the ability to bring plagues to eventually drive God's people out of Egypt. Drives them right up to the face of the Red Sea where there's this impossible barrier, and they get to witness the miraculous power of God as God splits the sea and leads them to the rest of their destiny, where they get the Ten Commandments and the laws. And again, a story that inspires all those who are oppressed today, because God can hear us too. God can see our miseries too, and God will deliver us too. What was that watershed moment? I remind you of the question and I remind you of the answer. It was when a mother could see beyond the circumstances and see something special about her child. From that moment on is when destiny changed everything. Nothing else really made Moses different from the other Hebrew babies except the way his mother looked at him. From her perspective, he was special. He's unique. Thank God for a mother's eyes. Amen? Moses' mother is not the only mother in history, though, whose eyes could see something special about their child, and with those eyes could change their destiny and ours. One of those mothers' name was Mary, and her son's name was Jesus. The book of John, chapter 2, tells us an important story from their life together. Verse 1 says, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there. It's a good thing mom was there that day. And it's certainly something that the writer of this gospel felt compelled to include. Jesus' mother was there. And Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. Those are almost add-ons. Mother was there, and Jesus and the disciples. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Hint, hint. Whisper, son, I think today could be your day. Your day to begin your public ministry. Your day to begin your first miracle kind of ministry. Jesus didn't see it. Jesus said, verse 4, woman, can you believe Jesus talking to his mom that way? It must be something like, ma'am, I don't know. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Jesus, woman, why do you involve me? He didn't see it. He didn't see it himself yet. He didn't see it in his day yet today. He didn't see it in his life yet. He doesn't see the turning point. Only one person at the wedding saw this thing. And who was it? It was mom. Again, Jesus, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. She's not put off by that. She kind of whispers to the servant, just do whatever he says. She could see something coming that not even Jesus could see. Do whatever he tells you. And wouldn't you know it, the inspiration came, the gift came, and Jesus began to give instructions to the servants. Take these big water jars, go fill them with water, and then begin pouring them to the guests. And the best wine of the day was served because Mary, because mom saw what even Jesus couldn't see. Years ago, I worked at the mental health center of LaSalle County. It was a building right next to the hospital. Now it's a parking lot. And we were the largest provider of mental health services in the county. And we got all kinds of voluntary clients, people who just needed help or wanted help would call us, and we'd make arrangements to help. And we would also get all of the mandated clients, where somebody had to make an appearance before a judge, and the judge would argue, you've got to go get counseling, and you've got to follow the directions of the counselor, and they would come to us. And they would come to us with instructions from the judge. I remember one particular mother and son that came to my office one day, and I was going to do the intake interview. And I asked them if they had brought anything with them from the court, because he was a court-mandated adolescent that I needed to visit. And sure enough, mom had the court papers. Do you remember those days when computer printers had those pages which were perforated, but they were joined to each other and just unfold like an accordion? She started unfolding pages of her son's rap sheet that had gone back a number of years already. And she, but yes, there's this, and yeah, and there's that, and there's, it was a long rap sheet followed by her words, but he's really a good boy. Mom knew the evidence was staring me in the face, page after page after page, and she wanted the last word. She could see something that the judge couldn't see. And she was going to make sure that the counselor saw it too. But he's really a good boy. Thank God for a mother's love and a mother's eyes. It's not only what Moses' mother did for him and what Mary did for Jesus. It includes you and me being mothers and seeing each other that way. The Bible tells us that we are spiritual parents in the world. Sometimes we call it brothers and others sisters. And some of us are like fathers and mothers to others. And part of the role, part of our role is to see the work of God in each other in spite of how things look on the surface. Our temptation might be able to see somebody by their erratic behavior, by their rudeness, by their other issues which are so obvious that nobody could miss it. But as being a part of it, the Church of Jesus Christ, we have the privilege, we have the blessing of looking at someone and seeing through it and seeing what nobody else can see. I see you as a fine child. I see you as a gift of God in you. I'm not just making that up. Jesus one day was busy in his ministry and crowds had gotten around him, and Mary, his biological mother, came to get his attention. Tried to get him to leave the crowd for a little bit, and he only left it for just a little bit, long enough to say, Mom, I need you to see all these folks around here. These are my mothers and my brothers and my sisters. They're seeing things in me today that I need to finish and I need to accomplish. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my mother and my father. So we get to learn, like, to look at people like Jesus did. What did Jesus see when he saw those fishermen? Probably cussing, being rough around the edges and so forth. He saw something nobody else could see. What could anyone have seen in a guy named Saul, whose name was eventually changed to Paul? Wasn't he just an obnoxious, arrogant, hostile murderer of Christians? Some Christian brothers could see beyond him. His name got changed. His ministry got changed. Our call, our blessing, our privilege is to see each other and see each other as fine when the rest of our world might not see it. Our opportunity is to see people in miserable failure down at the bottom and see a future upwards for them. To look beyond diagnoses and painful histories and see blessing and even beauty. It's a sacred responsibility, not just for Moses' mom and Jesus' mom. We, as we do the will of the Father, will be mothers to others. I was working on my message, and I thought, you know, it'd be nice to have an example from current events. Who has really made a spectacular splash onto the screen in our world these days that blessed and that inspired? And I wonder what the role of that person's mother was. The first name that came to me was the name Cody Lee. How many know who Cody Lee is? There are a number of, now, some of you who are not raising your hand will probably recognize him when you see him on the screen in a moment. Cody Lee is blind. He uses a white cane. Cody Lee is also autistic, and from very, just by direct observation, it'd be clear to you that this is likely autism, and he's very impaired with his autism. And I wonder what the struggles were like for mom and siblings and dad raising him with his disabilities, and I wonder what imaginations they would have for his future. Well, we probably need to get him to a special school. I wonder if it will be a boarding school. All of the tedious interruptions to the daily routine and discouragement and disappointment. He doesn't have friends like other people have friends. Well, sure enough, I'm sure that's a lot of what was going on in Cody's home. But around 18 months, his mother just noticed something occasionally. She wasn't so busy with her responsibilities, and she wasn't so busy with her interruptions that she couldn't notice it. Man, every time that kid goes next to a piano, he seems to be able to play a few notes together in a way that sounds like a song. And she saw it. And Cody Lee's destiny was changed. And I want to have the pleasure of showing you when he kind of splashed onto the world scene and affected all those who were watching him. Okay, let's have fun.
And his mom is the most amazing person.
Hello.
Welcome to America's Got Talent. What's your name?
I'm Cody.
Hi, Cody.
I'm Cody Lee.
I saw that mother holding on to him, and he had the cane, and she explained he was blind, and he's got autism.
We found out that he loved music really early on, and he started singing, and that's when I realized, oh my gosh, he's an entertainer. So through music and performing, he was able to withstand living in this world. It actually has saved his life.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
We'd love to hear you.
I'm so nervous. You know, they sat him down at the piano and his mother gives him that, you know, little pep talk.
This is your time of day. There's gonna be like 20 film cameras on. Ready?
Yeah.
Go. Boom.
It's probably the most worried I've been waiting for the first note to be hit.
I was just thinking, please be good, please be good. I was seconds away from going, okay, maybe this is too much for you. Well, you can come back on another day.
Some bad, bro.
eyes.
I've acted on my life in stages. 10,000 people watching, yeah. We're alone now, and I'm singing a song.
How's that? He does not lack any friends today. He's been viewed 400 and some odd million times. Now, I know that doesn't make them friends. He's probably a multimillionaire by now. Because in spite of all of the clutter and all of the trouble and all of the pain and all of the suffering and all the interruptions and all the nuisance, Mama saw he was a fine child. This kid's got a gift. And I'm going to do everything I can to get this kid and his gift to the world. I have good news for you. I don't know how miserable you've felt about yourself somewhere along the way. Your failures, your ordinariness, your backslidings, whatever it was. Jesus saw you and said, "You're a fine child. That's why you're here today. I want you. I've got you. And if you'll trust His vision of you." Let me say it again. If you'll trust His vision of you, it's beyond your imagination where He will take your life. I'm telling you the truth. May not be obvious, that gift. May not be obvious, that hope. But Jesus sees you and He sees me. And for those of you who already feel His love and filled with His love and maybe just always running over with His Spirit, I've got a mission for you. More important, not I've got one. It's the Lord's got a mission for you. He wants you to do what He did and pay attention. Notice people around you. One of my favorite stories is the story of the woman at the well. Going there in midday, probably to avoid being there with a crowd of other women who looked down on her, who had plenty of names they'd call her because maybe she'd already been with their own husband or their prior husband or whatever else. And all of the names and all the labels that would have fit her would not have been pretty. And Jesus saw right through it and said, "I see you as thirsty. The only thing wrong with you is you've been looking in the wrong well. And I got good news for you. Living water is standing next to you today." He saw a fine child. And guess what happened to her? Not only was her thirst satisfied, she said, "Jesus, will you excuse me a few moments because I want to run back home and tell everybody this good news. Somebody saw me differently than everybody else did. And that's who I want to give my life to." I'm inviting each and every one of us to the God who sees you as fine, as beautiful, as sculpted by Him. And I'm inviting us to stay on mission or get on mission if we've missed it at all, but be on mission of paying attention to those that we're walking around, even and maybe especially those who've covered with sin, covered with failure, covered with other diagnoses that might be scary or intimidating, and ask the Spirit of God to give you eyes of a mother to see. To every mother in the room today, we want to thank you for your eyes. For the way you see us, the way nobody else sees us. And in doing that, how you've taught us how to see others. I wonder if you'd stand with me. I want to lead us in prayer. while I'm praying and any other time through the rest of our time together, if you want someone to pray with you, I want you to feel free to, you can be where you're at and someone can pray with you, or you can come forward, front, middle, side, doesn't matter to us. Whatever's comfortable for you, and we'll pray with you. But let's all pray together right now. Lord, I thank you for the power that's in a mother's gaze. The mother of Moses, who saw a better future for him and thereby gave us a remarkable future. I want to thank you for the beautiful story of Mary and Jesus. Father, she saw some things ahead of Jesus. You're amazing, and the story's amazing, and the possibilities that unlocks for us is just remarkable. Oh, God, that we could have eyes to see around us the eternal moment in this physical moment. I want to thank you for everyone that's in the room today, because they're here because somebody saw a possibility, a potential. Somebody looked beyond the mud and the muck, saw the beauty and saw the hope. I want to thank you for the way you've Christ community in the past, where many have found it safe to walk in these doors with a diagnosis or with a rap sheet or some story that would often disqualify them, at least in their own minds, from what they really need and want. And you've given them places of beauty and places of honor. You've exchanged ashes for beauty. And for this blessing, we thank you. Now, Lord, I pray for everyone in the room today. I pray for each one who does not see themselves and their future the way you do. I renounce in the name of Jesus Christ every curse of the enemy that wants to blind our eyes from your vision for us. We ask your forgiveness for any and every way that we've tolerated a diminished vision. And we ask for new grace, new authority, new boldness, the letting loose of that lion inside of us to see and to let unfold a series of steps, preparing a basket, putting it in the river gently, praying, guarding, trusting you, and knowing that you will unfold our deliverance in the coming days, months, and years. We believe this, and for this we thank you. In Jesus' name. And everyone said amen. I'm going to ask.